You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We don't agree with violence. We do not agree with the government. Nah, we do.
The Wire.
So the Labour Party has been subject to 7 formal complaints and up to 12 general complaints about a Labour staffer who works around Parliament. No disciplinary action was taken by the party when these complaints were looked into in March, and Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has since admitted that the party did not handle the complaints as well as they could have. Labour Party President Nigel Haworth has also announced that there will be new rules to ensure that serious allegations will be looked at by an independent expert. These complaints are not the only ones, as there were allegations of sexual assault at a Young Labour summer camp last year. I reached out to Young Labour to ask if there are better protections in place against unacceptable conduct and if they felt that the culture had changed. However, I was directed back to Nigel Haworth, as they felt they would be inappropriate for anyone else to comment out of respect for those involved. I spoke to University of Auckland Employment Law Professor Dr. Bill Hodge to understand where a political party such as the Labour Party falls under employment laws and why the investigations have been kept internally so far.
The first thing, if you're watching what goes on in Wellington, is to say who is answering. For example, at the moment, the head of statistics, a woman named Liz McPherson, appears to be resigning. Now, fronting her exit is somebody from the State Services Commission, the State Services Commissioner named Peter Hughes. That indicates that it's public sector. It's public employment, and the employer, in effect, is the taxpayer, the government. She is a civil servant. She could be a member of the PSA. And there's lots of public employment paid for by the taxpayer in Wellington. But when you see the Labour Party, you don't see a State Services Commission answering. You don't see the State Services Commission investigating. It's really private employment, although it's a political party who are in the public realm. It's really private employment like any charity, incorporated society, or company. And they have their own obligations. Any employer has its own obligations to provide a safe place of work. Now, that's under two statutes. One is the Health and Safety at Work Act, and the other is the Employment Relations Act. So there are duties of health and safety and to provide a safe place of work, and that's not only from machinery and things that might hurt the worker, but also other workers who might bully or oppress in some way or sexually violate that employee. So it's a pretty standard obligation, whether you're working for the government as a state sector employee or you're working for a private organization, in this case the Labour Party.
So just this past few days, Jacinda said that they have failed, they have mishandled the way those complaints have been brought forward. So according to some of the complainants, it's all been a bit hush-hush, and there's criticism that there's, you know, hush money, that they're paid to go away, and everything's kind of kept internal. Is it problematic when these kind of issues are kept internally?
You've raised a couple issues there. First of all, I think Jacinda would be just as happy if the president of the party was answering those things, because she's not the employer in any sense. She has the positions, the offices that she holds, but really it's a party matter, and I think it would be more fair to the Prime Minister if Nigel Haworth, who's the president of the party, fronted up and dealt with those questions. Now, your second issue is the confidentiality, and this all the time. This is what I do as a practitioner of employment law. We enter into a mediation, we present some evidence of some investigation, and the person may say, well, if you let me resign and give me 6 months' salary, we'll sign a confidentiality agreement. And that has its advantages. First of all, it means that you're not going to be spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on lawyers to take a grievance through the Employment Relations Authority and court, so it suits both sides to save money on legal fees. The downside is it looks like it's a secret, darkly kept secret that the public don't get to see, and it's all hidden, and particularly the victims may feel that it's been hidden and there's no accountability. Well, we don't know. You never know what's in a confidential settlement. The person may have gotten 6 months' salary tax-free under Section 123(1)(c)(1), which means it's tax-free. We don't know that, and confidentiality is a wonderful tool to resolve an employment dispute, with the downside being it's secret, it's opaque, and you don't know what's behind it, and the victim feels frustrated. So this is what employment lawyers do, is engage in confidential settlements. with all the advantages, comma, and the disadvantages that go with that.
Because within that, in the Debbie Francis report, it's pointed out that there was a irreconcilable difference clause, and she pointed out that that, in combination with the non-disclosure agreement, was possibly problematic. Is that something that is quite common?
Well, problematic meaning it may actually be illegal if there's an irreconcilable difference. I think that's in the public sector, but it's possibly also in the Labor Party. But the irreconcilable difference may not be a justifiable exit. It may not be justification to dismiss, because the employer has a duty to focus on or work on or somehow improve differences between, let's say, one manager and one or more people in the manager's line of reporting. And you can't simply say, irreconcilable differences, you're gone, or somebody is gone. That's not a sufficient investigation. That's not a sufficient justification for the exit. And that's what Debbie Francis meant, although she's not an employment lawyer, but that's what she meant, that there is an issue there. If somebody brought a personal grievance all the way to the employment court, the court might say, that's not good enough. The employer has a duty to work through these issues for the benefit of the victims or the complainants or whatever is the source of the irreconcilable differences. So simply slapping a label on it is not sufficient.
What needs to be sufficient grounds for someone to be fired?
Well, you need serious misconduct, but before you find serious misconduct, you have to have an investigation. And that means, and here's the really big difficulty, whether it's a soccer team, some other sports team, or a big law firm. All of those organizations have had what are called reviews. Now, a review means or doesn't mean that the accused was interviewed, doesn't mean that the statements from the complainants were put to the accused. That's what happened in the law firm. If it's an employment matter, you take down the details, you interview the complainants, you get the best possible record and any other witnesses of the complaints, etc., and there must be names at the bottom. The people can't be anonymous. And that then goes to the accused so that she or he, more likely he, has a full and informed opportunity to answer. Now, what that means, that's the full rigor of employment law. And I think if you're in a very visible public sector or public operation, whether it's the Labor Party or TV New Zealand or some other very public organization, you probably don't want the most transparent and rigorous procedural investigation. What you would probably prefer, maybe some of the victims would prefer that as well. They don't want to be identified. You probably do see the advantages of the confidential settlement.
I guess my gut reaction is when there are serious claims like sexual harassment and it's kept internally, doesn't that feel a bit, I don't know, I wonder, is that the natural justice that Jacinda says that they're expecting to follow?
Well, it depends on whose view you're asking about natural justice. If you're in the media, if you're a curious member of the public, then obviously you're saying it ain't natural justice to keep it secret. But if you're the victim, and the natural justice requirement is that you can't remain anonymous, then is it, quote, natural justice from the victim's point of view if they're identified to the alleged perpetrator and then there's a public hearing in the Employment Relations Authority? So there are some downsides to a full transparency, because it might not be in the best interests, or it might be the last thing that the complainant wants. But natural justice does tend to require transparency and identification of all the parties.
Right. That makes sense, actually, looking at it from that perspective, because Jacinda was basically saying that the party would take a good look at it as to whether or not they're satisfied with the natural process of justice and supported the complainant. So I guess I'm wondering, from your perspective, what would that look like? What rigorous systems would that look like? Because it's been happening quite a few times now, leading all the way back to the summer camp, from the Young Labour summer camp, which happened a few years ago.
It does look like a cultural thing in the Labour Party in particular. In my experience, the public sector as the employer, not the Labour Party as the employer, but the public sector as employer, is pretty effective and pretty good about going through a process. Remember this, if you're the employer, whether it's Department of Statistics or the Labour Party for that matter, you have to walk a tightrope between being fair and giving a safe place of work to the people who are making a complaint. But at the same time, you have to be fair to the person who is accused. You can't simply say, ah, we got a complaint, you're fired. You can't do that lawfully. You have to go through what is called in the statute a sufficient investigation, and there are various requirements for the sufficient investigation. So the legal requirements of the Employment Relations Act are pretty rigorous, and there are many times when it suits everyone. I'm not saying hide it and conceal it and make everything confidential, but a quiet approach sometimes suits all the parties. But behind that, I think if you're suggesting this, if there's more than one complaint and it keeps going on, it does look like a cultural matter. Maybe the type of people, young people who are coming into the party with enthusiasm, maybe their enthusiasm and or a tendency for alcohol on the weekends is a bit much. That's possibly a cultural thing rather than a pure institutional procedural failing. But it's complicated.
Do you think there's adequate protections in place for young people entering politics or vulnerable people?
Well, I haven't done that. Yeah, I haven't been there myself for 50 years, so I don't know for sure. But I think it probably comes with the territory that you get youthful enthusiasm, and you might get the same thing at a rock concert or Rhythm and Vines or something of that sort. But the culture of a political party should be able to lift its game and be above a rock concert culture.
Is youthful enthusiasm enough excuse for sexual harassment allegations?
Well, no, of course not. But my point is that if you're an institution, you have to lift your game and deal with or prevent, to put in place guidelines and even a bit of training for some of the managers so you prevent it from happening in the first place, rather than saying, oh, this is a time for youthful exuberance with a bit of alcohol. Well, that's absolutely...
Would you say that within politics there is a culture of harassment and bullying? Because it leads all the way back, not just within the young party members, but we can see that within Parliament as well, within politics.
I'm not sure that politics is any worse than aspects of the private sector, although we've just seen, for example, a nasty case from a local body government and a man habitually sexually harassing in a nasty way some of the council employees. I suspect if you scratch any industry, any sector of the commercial community, you'd find the same thing. It's just that certain agencies and political parties would be one of them. There's a lot of visibility, people are articulate, people have expectations, and they may be more willing to push those expectations and stand up and complain. You might not be the same if you're at a big commercial organization.
But did you have anything else you wanted to bring up?
I think the main thing I would say is, it's what I teach, it's what I practice, it's fascinating to look at employment disputes. But the first question I would always suggest people identify is, who exactly was the employer in this matter, so that you can correctly identify who is responsible and who must provide to the complainant a safe place of work. And I think that's the start, or that's the initial first step. Who's the employer? And then I also want to know, I want to know exactly who the complainant is, so I can understand the relationship between the complainant and the manager or whatever other employee is being complained about. So the first thing you need to do is understand the parties.
That was Dr. Bill Hodge from the University of Auckland.
The Wire.
The Census 2018 review is out, and
that was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.